irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.
Oh, nice. Wow, Michael.
That's so nice of these folks to stop by.
We've had a crowd here hanging around the studio all day just waiting for you to get here, buddy. How you been, man?
Looking for our guests. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing good, hanging in.
And we're talking about your hair right before we went on the air. So
great, let them behind the curtain, Michael. Fine.
Let our guests know what you're doing, why that it's so long and beautiful.
It's because I can't afford a haircut. Yes?
Oh, no.
I tend to keep it long for the end of the year because that's when we do Shakespeare and that's when we do Dickens and that's all that. So, yes, I have a little bit of a respect the main thing going on right now. So, but soon, very soon, it'll be short again. I'm playing a police officer in February, which means I got to chop it up. So.
Oh, good. I mean, well, good for...
You getting tired of looking at me all shaggy?
No. I'm not sure if I like the man bun when you do the man bun thing.
Hey, Hoyt Richards likes it. He said I look good in it. I'll take anything Hoyt says these days, too,
well,
right?
Yes, that's true. He's a lovely guy. So,
Michael, you're looking happy and well. How are you feeling?
I feel not as good as I might look.
You do.
Thank you for the compliment.
You look like you're ready to rock, man.
Really?
You really do. Walked in with a good energy and moving good.
Well, that's good.
Obviously, you've been dealing with back issues.
Yes, back issues, and that's no fun. And so I'm working. I'm exercising all the time and relieving, you know, the pain. It's the sciatic nerve going through the right side of my leg. And it's like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
It happens, you know, when we get younger.
Oh, okay. Well, we will hope that those exercises help and you start looking and feeling as good as you look. I mean,
Thanks, no doubt
about it. Yeah. Here we are. It is already November 16th.
It is. Can you believe it?
And we have, Michael, a couple of very talented performers with us here today.
That's right, Andrew. We have two members of the amazing cast of the Pasadena Playhouse's production of King Charles III. Please welcome Jim Abel and Nikki Dukas.
Welcome, welcome.
Did I mess that up? Did I mess Jim's last name up?
It is actually Jim Abley.
Abley, okay.
Answer to just about anything.
Oh, you know, we get that way in this town, don't we? Look, if you're going to cast me, you can call me what you want.
Just call my name.
But it's very rare that people get my name right, so thank you.
Oh, really? Okay, good. I got lucky.
Well, now just
on one count.
So people can Google you here. Nikki is spelled N-I-K-E. Mm-hmm. Is that correct? So, I mean, as people are listening to the show, if you want to find out a little more about their work, both of these guests have had amazing careers, and I enjoyed learning about you guys last night. It was a lot of fun, but it's interesting, this show that you're doing, that we're going to talk about here in just a little bit more, this is something that has an audience primed and ready for it right now. It's about the royal family, is that correct?
Yes.
Cool.
It's a play that's, what, maybe 4 or 5 years mm-hmm. old now. Started in London. The London cast came to Broadway just a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. and now it's starting to hit the regions, and here we are in Southern California. This is the premier production in the LA area. So
well, I tell you, it's going to be. This sounds great, and I've got so many friends who are absolute Anglophiles who are dying to hear more about this subject. We should pay some bills first, though. Yeah, Michael.
Yes, I think we should.
That. We'll talk more with our guests in just a moment. But before we do that, Michael, let's thank our sponsors.
We'd like to thank our sponsor, ladies and gentlemen, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to State of the Arts.
Yeah, indeed.
No doubt about it.
We encourage all of you listening to this program to visit Breakdown Services and Performing Arts Live to find out more about all of the happenings in the Southland, of which there are many, especially at this time of year.
No kidding. Two great resources, to be sure, Michael. And speaking of great things, did anything interesting or great happen in your theatrical week?
My theatrical week, play-wise, or going to the theater this week, no. But show-wise, of something I actually... produced last night was kind of a cool adventure.
Tell me.
And kind of straying away from what I usually produce. What I'm talking about here is that I have a little place in North Hollywood called Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal.
Wow.
You know the Federal? It is, David knows ephedra.
We obviously have non-drinkers on this show, man. Anybody who wants to go out and get a great drink, the Federal is the place to go. We love the
Federal. The Federal is the oldest building in the East San Fernando Valley.
That's right.
It was built in 1926 as the Federal Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And across the street from it, we have the second building that came later that year, which is the El Portal Theater.
Mm-hmm.
So...
I know exactly where you mean.
Yeah, second floor of the Federal. I was brought in to create a supper club and produce the kind of music that I produce, which is the music of the Great American Songbook and also the music of Broadway and contemporary pop and heavier emphasis on Broadway and Great American Songbook. I've dedicated it to my mentor, Rosemary Clooney, who taught me everything I know and with whom I was a friend and her road manager for quite a while. So, at any rate, we strayed away from what I usually produce last night. It was a very special evening, and this man's name you may not know, but his voice you know. And it was his 65th birthday last night. Bill Farmer, who is Disney's voice of Goofy and Pluto for 30 years.
Golly!
What fun.
And when he came to Los Angeles, because he's not from here, his agent sent him out. This was his first audition, and 1,100 people, 1,100 men auditioned for that voice, and he
and
got
four dogs. 1,100 men and four dogs.
And he got the job, and it's been serving him rather well ever since. So, yeah,
Does he do other things as well, or just that voice?
He does do 100 other voices, literally.
And only voices. He doesn't appear live.
Yeah, so it's he's never done the acting thing or anything, but his son is quite talented.
A musician, with a
group called Anabot, who have dropped their first CD release concurrent with his birthday. So it was a huge event, and with a very different crowd. It was the older crowd for Bill, and it was this younger, hip crowd for Anabot, for the band.
It
was a fun evening.
I would hasten to say that 65 is not an older
crowd. No, not at all. But, you know, older than the younger
older
folks
than
that were in there.
The usual bunch.
Yes. So that
but it was hopping, yeah? I
mean, it was hopping, yeah. It was a lot of, you know, when you get that kind of mix in one place. And it was loud.
Yeah, right. No kidding.
It was okay. It was
but
great.
Nice to hear that that went well and that it was an exciting
very successful,
night. Always is down there.
Yeah.
Sterling's upstairs at the Federal. Obviously, you guys do shows. Do you do it every month?
We do 3 to 4 a month.
To 4 a month. So generally speaking, if people were to go to Brown Paper Tickets and Google Sterling's upstairs at the Federal, they're going to find an event they can go to.
Is that correct? Yeah, thank you. And the other thing, just to kind of put the button here, is that I'm also working. Tomorrow night we open a new musical from the Sherman Brothers.
Am I in it?
No, you're not, but you probably could be. Should be.
Hey, anything for the Sherman Brothers, you know I'd love to be in. So.
And if you're not familiar with the Sherman Brothers... They wrote a string of Disney movies.
Huge
starting
Disney movies.
With Mary Poppins
and
Chitty Chitty Bang Bang and The Aristocrats and you name it, they wrote it. They are the most celebrated composers in the Disney family and probably of all the movies. They're two-time Oscar-winning brothers. One of them has passed. The other is 89 years old and still just so high-spirited and a friend, Richard Sherman. And the brothers wrote a musical in the 90s called Levi, which was based on the life of Levi Strauss.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a German immigrant who came over into this country to seek success and with his family. And he certainly did that in spades. And first in New York and then came out to San Francisco. And it is a very interesting story because they were very, very kind of persecuted as Germans,
especially at that time. Sure,
They had to, you know, they couldn't live just anywhere. They were charged higher taxes than other people. It was a very different time. So,
that's right.
And he was one of the most philanthropic men really of his stature in that time until, you know, the time of his death.
And more importantly, I mean, he did so many different things that are now impactful to not only fashion, but to all of California's economy, a really influential person.
Well, last year, the Levi Strauss Company reported their earnings of $4.6 billion. Can you imagine?
It's about what I made last year.
Yeah.
Equity contracts, you know, I mean, if you calculate in the...
But, yeah, so it's exciting. So the world it's a world premiere.
It's pretty impressive.
Like come out of the chest, and it's
and
been
starring
put on the stage.
A great friend of the show,
Mark Ginsburg.
Who is always amazing in everything he does. So, and that's at the Hudson, is that correct?
That is not. It's at the Camino Theater on the campus of Los Angeles City College, which is a lovely theater. It's about 300-400 seats. And that's being directed by Bruce Kimmel and choreography by Kay Cole from Broadway's A Chorus Line.
And Richard Sherman is involved in it, too.
Richard is
there,
very involved. Yeah. Yes, you know, he'll be there opening night.
Great opportunity for those college kids to work with some of the crew and all that. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pretty cool to get to do. So
it's a big night and a big weekend. And the show is a limited engagement because of the holidays, but it goes through December 3rd.
And obviously with Mark, you know you've got an amazing cast involved. He is such an amazing performer. But more than that, this is something they do a couple of times, right, where they've done things at this space to help
bring
the arts to that area.
The director, Bruce Kimmel, this is his alma mater, and you'd be amazed if you look down the list on our website of the now famous people who went to that college. Because it was back in the day where it was one of the leading colleges here. So they have a theater academy, and he vowed to always kind of bring something in every year, and whether it's an original piece like this or something that has been done before, but maybe not very often before.
Yeah.
So he's held true to his promise, and it's a great opportunity for the professionals that he brings in to work with the kids academy who are always cast in these things as well.
He gets back and basically gives them a Broadway quality show to be in before they graduate college.
Exactly.
Pretty nice.
So
important.
Very much.
And Bruce is a great musician. So, hey, there is a distinguished director. Well, but musician too. I mean,
musically he has the ear. He knows all about Broadway. I mean, back and forth. He's a record producer. You're right in that sense.
He's always surprised
musician,
me with his. I mean, he knows something about everything, and I've always enjoyed everything he's put up.
Yeah.
So there's a distinguished-looking gentleman sitting to my right.
I'm just thinking the same thing.
Let's give him some time. Ladies and gentlemen, we will go ahead and bring him in now, Michael, if that's all right.
Absolutely. And let me see. I'm sorry. I didn't even turn my page. Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen. Our first guest is a veteran of the stage and screen. You've seen him in such films as The Commission, Playing by Heart, and Student Affairs.
On television, he has appeared on Law & Order, Chicago Hope, 6 Feet Under, NYPD Blue, The West Wing, JAG, Big Love, Mad Men, Cold Case Greek, Crossing Jordan, The Agency, Cold Case Castle, and 24, as well as his reoccurring guest role as Kenneth on Pretty Little Liars.
His theatrical credits include the Oregon Shakespeare Festival production of Roe at Arena Stage and Berkeley Repertory. In New York, he appeared in View of the Dome, The Country Girl, and Angel City, off-Broadway, and in Hedda Gabler on Broadway.
His regional credits include roles with the Old Globe, Seattle Repertory Theater, MacArthur Theater, Ford's Theater, Repertory Theater of St. Louis, Milwaukee Rep, and Pittsburgh Public, among many others.
Today he joins us to talk about his current starring role as Charles in Pasadena Playhouse's production of King Charles III. Please join me in welcoming Jim...
Abley. With all those long lists of credits,
Mr. Abley. Well, I got to tell you now. Obviously, I've seen you for years. I was a huge NYPD Blue fan and West Wing.
Sure.
But it's interesting too because television is such a difficult medium to work in. What's it like to go from somebody who has the list of television credits where my printer almost ran out of ink printing my script, and then to switch to the stage? Is there one that you prefer to do more, or is it just
absolutely
different mediums?
The stage is my. Is my joy. It's where I learned that I want to do what I'm doing right now. I did it for many years in New York before I even got in front of a camera. So it runs deep to all of us in this production, and certainly it's a joy to be up there right now doing it again. It's the same It's the same skills that we use. We just...
Different paycheck?
much different paycheck, which is why some of us are here in California. Right. But
also different for the soul, you would say, as well.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And I think Nikki would agree with me that this is a very deep and soul-giving play. For us.
Well, you know, about such an iconic figure. I mean, the two of them, but her in particular, Diana, my goodness. You know, I just recently saw a PBS documentary that was aired on their lives, and it's still as fascinating to me now as it was when, you know, they met and we went through that whole thing, the wedding, and the world embraced these two people and still embrace them. The royals, I mean, it's like no other royal family really in the world, I think.
Well, they're mythological. Yeah. Every little intricacy of their relationship that we've picked apart, you know, through the media and in our news is life and death issues.
Sure.
And it runs very deep in our cultural identity, I think, to have kings and queens and princes and you know the loss of an abdication, the loss of power. So
and for the love of a woman too,
and
you know,
for
that idea. That's an interesting thing too. I think the royal family, because the British royal family is every royal family. I mean, Victoria had relations who were, you know, in every hierarchy throughout Europe, and you realize that the English was the only one that truly survived in its form because they were able to adapt. They changed at every turn, and that's true when it came time for Charles, who had such a disastrous phase for so long and has now kind of hit a sweet spot. To where he's gained a lot of public support. I think people have watched him go through trials and now are thinking, hey, this guy who for a while was not looked at very fondly suddenly has the love of the people coming back to his side. What's it like to play somebody like that? Is that a difficult thing to study because you know the man is out there now and still crafting his story?
You know, like with any play, I think if you follow the guidelines that the playwright has set out for you, Mike Bartlett's play is not just beautiful to listen to, but the characterizations are so clear on the stage, and more so, have become more so to us in rehearsal as we listen and respond to each other, which is all we really try to do night after night. It's daunting to play a real figure, especially one who's still alive, but it's there in the playwright's words.
Have you worried about not being allowed back in London if you don't do it the way he wants? Grabs your passport, yanks it out.
You know, the original production did get some notoriety for playing the royals. I think here in America, we enjoy them on a more celebritized level.
But, probably true.
Nikki and I and the other cast members, and I want you to speak up on this too, we're trying hard not to impersonate the royals. We're using them as guideposts for the characters in the play. And we do go to YouTube once in a while and try to pick up the physical references or the gestures and the peculiarities that we all know of the royals, but these are not impersonations. So.
Well, and it's an imaginative play, too. Mr. Bartlett obviously had some amazing creative energy that he put into this, which you have to do to make a story like this palatable for the stage.
Sure.
And, of course, Nikki, we will say, plays a ghost. Is that correct? So there's not only modern history, but there's some past history as well in this, and all your beloved royal family is in that. So if you want to find out who she plays, grab a ticket and go see the show as soon as you can. But more than that, would you say that the relationships between these two people are not only the people who are there, but they're so stuck in history because they're dictated by everything that came before them. Charles' marriage was dictated by what happened to his mother and his grandmother. That's got to be hard for any human to deal with, and certainly for an actor portray on stage as well.
Do you want to speak up on that?
No, I think that's right. I think one of the themes of the plays is how do you live your own independent life when you also have an obligation to your country and to your family and to your genetic inheritance.
That's
and
right.
When you've been raised in such a public eye, the public and the private are kind of a fascinating theme that run throughout this play, and that's what's so fun as an actor to have scenes where you do have to create a public persona and still try to identify what your needs and desires are underneath that. So the royals are definitely under constant scrutiny and feel the
And Jim's more. Character is questioning whether he wants to continue with this, the role. He wants to be king, but he wants to change what the role of the king is. And he's threatening, he's challenging the status quo.
Wow.
That's sort of his central struggle, right?
Yeah. The role of monarch for many years has been defined as someone who encourages and consults with but does not make decisions. That's left to the parliament.
Sounds we a lot like being a husband.
Right. we don't know about that in America. We just assume that, you know, all the people who are leading our country are in control, and we elect them to do that.
Unfortunately.
Fortunately or unfortunately.
Perhaps, perhaps we shouldn't go too deep into that.
That's why we thought it was supposed to be anyways.
But the British system of parliament is a little different. There is elected officials that create bills that require the signature of the reigning monarch, but the monarch really does not have a voice. Even though the monarch is the voice of the people, they do not initiate laws. And in this
can they refuse to sign a law?
Well, I think you should come and see the play. Yes, in fact, it's happened just a few times throughout history, and it's caused massive chaos.
It's
and
a huge step
poses,
to take. Yeah.
I'll say this is not giving away the play, but I think this is important. Important in telling your audience about, because this is something that we worry about in our own country. Parliament introduces a bill to potentially delegitimize the press, and Charles takes a stand against that, even though he, all his life, has been sort of
a victim
of it. Mm-hmm. Because he does not really have the authority to change the will of Parliament, this becomes an issue in the play, and it causes an issue in his family as well. So it's filled with incredible political and personal
intrigue,
conflict, which is fun. That's what we thrive on.
The voice you're hearing now is that of the great Jim Abley, who's playing Charles in the play King Charles III. Now, obviously, this is a play that's going up at the Pasadena Playhouse, which is one of our favorite venues. It's a wonderful place with an amazing history in and of itself. So many people that we know have come out of there, been educated there, and starred in amazing shows there. Now, you guys opened up on November 8th, and you run through December 3rd. Is that correct?
We started previewing on the 8th, and we just opened on the 12th this past Sunday. So we're still fresh.
And tickets are priced anywhere from as low as $25 to $96, depending on where you seat and what night you attend. Obviously, you can go to PasadenaPlayhouse.org and get tickets there, or my favorite is just call them up at 626-356-7529. They always have a good, helpful box office staff there to help with that as well. So.
And there's a great little restaurant, actually, adjacent in the courtyard area of the Pasadena Playhouse.
So there is.
Call ahead and make a reservation. You can dine and then just walk across the courtyard, and there you are. In
the
should
theater.
Also mention that this is the State Theater of
California. Yes, it is indeed,
and it is their centennial year.
Yes.
So,
along with
the new reign of a new artistic director this season, it's their centennial year. So
that's great.
It's a good time to come and see them.
Well, the play again is called King Charles III, and we're speaking with Jim Abley here. And Jim, I want to ask you before we let you go here and move on to your beautiful counterpart, can you tell me what your feelings are if Charles will ever actually become king? Because that's in somewhat of a doubt right now, correct? There's talk that they may jump over him and go straight to the very popular William.
He's been waiting for nearly 70 years. One of the beautiful lines, Shakespearean lines in the play is, my life has been a lingering for the throne. Nothing could be truer with this man. His mother is still alive. We don't know, if he will ever be king. I have to say, I would love to see him be king, and not just because I'm playing him. He is a man of great integrity. He's interested in art and
huge
architecture.
Philanthropy, absolutely.
The Prince's Trust is all about helping disenfranchised people. He's been maligned over many years for, I think, things out of his control. I feel a special kinship to him because I'm playing him. But it's refreshing in this country when we don't have as much respect for our leaders to see somebody that you'd really like to see at the, you know, at the wheel.
Absolutely interesting.
Well, certainly. I mean, they have to be, you know, bigger than life, as they usually, not always are. I mean, and the one that's in office right now in this country is bigger than life, but mm-hmm. in a very unfortunate way. Yeah. And I think it's really a detriment to be considered something, for America to be considered the laughingstock of the mm-hmm. world, which yeah. it is. And I'll leave it at that. It's just that in my wildest dreams, I could have never imagined, well, but where technology has come and what it's allowed people to do. But for some, it is so unpresidential to be tweeting. You know, I think that's an argument that is out there with everybody. It's, and how disrespectful it is to just the country in general. I mean, because that's how you lose respect. You know, you're not even gaining anybody's support for being of a certain stature that the office requires.
Yeah.
And it is belittling.
It's fascinating. And everything you said there is very much what was said about Charles when he got his divorce from Diana. So people said, well, this will do it. He'll never be king now. That's it. You can't have a divorced king. You can't have that happen in this day and age. And I think that in 20 years, that's changed. You know, so it is interesting to see how our political systems ebb and flow for good or ill, depending on how it goes, and how Charles has had doors opened up to him that simply weren't open to him a few years ago. And the way he did that was by sheer perseverance and staying the course, which if that's not the royal family, man, I tell you, for 200 years they right. have changed and yet stayed the same.
Right. They have always adapted to what the predominant culture is. And the question is Charles prepared for that, or is Will and Kate more prepared for that in this sort of wacky and
anybody else want to see us jump to the 2-year-old? I just think it would be awesome to have a 2-year-old king like they used to do in antiquity. Watch a little dude up there in diapers, little Winnie the Pooh diaper up there.
We're already doing that. In this country,
we've already done it. We've proved it can happen.
We've experienced
well, and in Siam, the same thing. The royal family there.
King and I, that's yes, right. That's sure. exactly right. Well, this is obviously a show that we're going to talk about more here in just a few moments.
Sounds so exciting.
It really, I got to tell you, I've got so many friends who are just absolutely pumped about this kind of material, and I think it's a cool thing to talk about because it is so timely. Netflix has multiple documentaries out right now.
Right.
Sounds like an enthralling show. Shall we do a live arts calendar?
Why not?
Let's jump in and do
that. Let's do it.
We'll take a few moments here to talk about the West Coast premiere that promises to make quite a reputation for itself. We're talking about the one, the only, Spamilton. That's right. The New York Times calls it convulsively funny. The Chicago Tribune says it will leave you howling with delight all night. It's a theatrical phenomenon, a cultural touchstone, and a certified sensation. It's the best show about Alexander Hamilton since, you know, that other one.
Hamilton creator Lin-Manuel Miranda says, I laughed my brains out. Charles McNulty of the Los Angeles Times raves non-stop treats Miranda's masterpiece with the rambunctious love it deserves.
After tearing it up in New York and Chicago, this hilarious parody from the comedic mastermind behind the long-running hit Forbidden Broadway fulfills its manifest destiny by conquering the West Coast. Get in line now for Spamilton, the extended run on stage now at the Kirk Douglas Theater through January 7th.
And for tickets or more information about Spamilton, call 213-628-2772 or visit centertheatergroup.com. And if you know every word to My Shot and can sing every part in nonstop at the same time, then stay for Spamilton karaoke every Friday night after the show in Kirk Douglas at the Kirk Douglas Theater and in the lobby. That's where that takes place. Complete with revolutionary cocktails, free food, and the passionate energy of Alexander Hamilton himself.
Right. Spamilton.
Yeah.
Spamilton, man, Spamilton. I tell you. It's funny because theater has certainly become fun again, hasn't it? There's a lot of cool shows out there, a lot of fun stuff. Shall we say hello to this beautiful lady sitting to your left?
Because she's raised the bar of good looks in this room.
No doubt about it. Our next guest most recently appeared in the world premiere of Yoga Play at South Coast Repertory and in Casa Valentina at Pasadena Playhouse. Valentina, you're right.
Yeah. There we go. And some of her other theatrical credits include roles at the Jewel Theater, the Kinetic Theater, Picked Classic Theater, the Old Globe, the Mark Taper Forum, Shakespeare Festival LA, the Berkeley Repertory Theater, Shakespeare Santa Cruz, the Berklee Shakespeare Festival, and the American Conservatory Theater.
She boasts a litany of TV credits, including reoccurring roles on Desperate Housewives, as well as appearances on Modern Family, Numbers, Criminal Minds, The Guardian, Diagnosis Murder, Judging Amy, Caroline in the City. Is it Caroline or Carolyn?
Caroline.
Caroline in the City, that's right. Empty Nest, Almost Perfect, and Little Girls in Pretty Boxes, among a host of others.
She joins us today to talk about her role as the ghost in King Charles III at Pasadena Playhouse. Please welcome the very talented and very beautiful Nikki Dukas.
Thank you very much. Yeah, maybe we gave you a round of applause, too. That's pretty nice. Right? You're getting some support there. How you doing, Nikki? It's great to have you here. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So we want to talk about this show that you're doing, but we want to talk about it in terms of how exciting it is and how a little bit mysterious it is, too, correct?
It is mysterious for me because I am playing the character in the program that is listed as the ghost who appears...
How Shakespearean.
Well, that's another really exciting component of this play.
Right.
It's sort of built in a five-act Shakespearean structure. It's got a lot of Shakespearean components, and yet it's set in the contemporary world, and there are all kinds of references to telephones and microphones and things like that. And yet it has a lot of... structural things that are Shakespearean, and the language can be beautifully Shakespearean and very down to earth, speaking the
kind
way
of homespun colloquial. That's
some
interesting.
People don't even know when we're speaking.
Some people
in verse.
Don't even know we're speaking in verse part of the time.
Wow!
Mm.
Wow!
But the role of you as an actress in this show and production is not the only thing that you're doing with this.
That's right. I'm also, there are 16 actors in the production, and there are probably at least twice that many characters, and I'm the accent coach for everyone.
Oh my.
And playing a few small roles in the play, and it's really been fun and challenging, and we have a lot of different sounds. You know, the royals speak like nobody really else in England does. They have their own, sort of like the Kennedys, they have their own sound. And then there's the sort of elevated, what we call received pronunciation speech, RP. And then there's sort of the way the man on the street speaks, and some Cockney, and we have one British actor in the cast. So it's been a it's been a lot of work, but a lot of fun.
And does he give his approval to all of these accents?
He does not, but I request it. So I make him sure, I check in with him occasionally.
Does that talent that you have, does that bring you a lot of work? You know, you must be hired many, many times for many different situations.
Yeah, I do a lot of accent coaching all over the city. I just did something at the Geffen, and I do it a lot at A Noise Within. And
film, television, everything?
I've done a little bit for television, yeah. I mean, mostly I'm an actor, but I'm also a teacher and a director and an accent coach. I sort of do everything.
Can you give us a little sampling of the voice of the ghost?
I certainly can. She sounds something like this.
Oh, my.
She's very proper. She has a very refined accent.
I got to tell you, I can almost guess who you're playing just by that. So there's something interesting, too, about the accent coach. I'd never had a full appreciation for that until I was touring with a show in Europe in 98. Mm. And I went to go see one of my favorite composers, Andrew Lloyd Webber's Whistle Down the Wind, of course, set in the American South. Mm. And I watched a brilliant group of British actors destroy the American Southern accent.
Really?
It was horrible. I couldn't watch the show, and it was a great, I mean, I really enjoyed the performances, but it hit my ears so wrong being from Kentucky. So when I came back, you know, and that was one of the first times when I went, oh my goodness, there is so much more to performing than just being a charismatic performer, able to empathize, able to convey emotion. You have to have such a craft. And I'm lucky I learned that when I was 18, because a couple years later it would have passed you by, and you don't have time to go back and do that. Young actors, take time to study accents. Take time to give yourself a toolbox full of things
Thank
to
you
use.
For saying
so
that,
it's
because
so true.
You do have to study them, and when actors come on this cold, it's almost impossible to learn an accent for a play. I mean,
That's
you
right.
can do it, and people do it all the time. I've done it, but it's preferable if you've got some experience.
If you've had it inside you for a lot of times, you know, before. That's so true. Now, how did you get involved with this particular production? It's obviously a show that's been a premiere on the West Coast this time. Mm-hmm. How did you find out about it? Was there somebody you knew involved?
Well, Michael McKetty directed it, and he and I have worked together a lot, a couple of times as an actress, but mostly at A Noise Within. I've been his accent coach for...
He's such a wonderful director.
He is a great director.
Wonderful, and a wonderful person. And
yes.
to work with, and he's very, very collaborative. And when this play, in fact, I was the first person cast because he wanted me to do the accent coaching, and then he thought, well, what a great way to have you around all
no
the time.
No kidding.
Why don't you play these roles as well?
Plus, it's cheaper.
I was going to say, that's very smart.
No, it's not cheaper. They're paying me for both jobs, which was also
you.
Incentive.
But I'll bet he was pretty smart about it and said, you know, if she's here, we can get a couple extra questions in during rehearsal
that's,
times.
He got more of my time.
Yeah,
than
he did. He
was get,
an
was,
economic
was
man,
great.
Smart man,
great.
No doubt about
so,
it.
So, and it's, you know, it's a lot more work for me. But, so he asked me if I would do it, and he's just so wonderful. I mean, he had me come in for the auditions because he wanted to make sure the actors had good ears, and I've never done that before.
Well, if you're playing Charles, you got to have great ears.
You
that's
have
very true. And Jim ears. Does not have Charles's ears.
No, yeah,
but
big
he's so good.
We, right?
So good, Michael Katzman.
I can
anyway.
Act big ears.
Just have somebody walk behind you and hold them out for you there.
You know, we were saying briefly before we sat down here that when we started this process with Michael, we sat around the table for days and days and read and spoke and talked between scenes. And Michael is so democratic mm-hmm. in his process and wanted everybody to be a part of what some people would think is their own, you know, personal characterization or journey. But it was such a joy to be able to do that after so much of what we do here in Los Angeles, just mm-hmm. hitting our marks.
That's right.
Just,
yeah, and,
you know,
and,
being prepared.
And adding to that, it also gave us this chance to get to know each other on such an intimate way, which
it's
you also
great.
Don't get to know in a studio, in a set. You know, it's hard to get to know. And when you have this sort of close camaraderie and shared vision with actors, it just, you feel it in the texture of the production.
And the audience feels it, too. They,
no
they,
doubt about
they can
that.
See it.
Yeah.
The play we're talking about, of course, is King Charles III, written by Mike Bartlett, and it's on stage now at the Pasadena Playhouse. They've just opened, and you guys run through December 3rd, as we said before. Tell me, when you decided to kind of go out and tackle this project with living people, was there any hesitation of going, okay, I definitely don't want to be a caricature, which obviously every actor mm-hmm. knows is a death knell, but at the same time, I want to kind of encapsulate this larger-than-life group of people?
It's a great question, and you know, I recently did at South Coast Rep, I was in a production of All the Way, and I played Lady Bird Johnson. And you do all this research, and you watch them over and over and over again, and you listen to their voices, and you feel such an obligation when someone has been living to be an honest, fair representation of them and an advocate for them. And you do... at some point, you have to stop thinking about the actual person, because no matter what, you're still playing a fictional character, and that separation is sometimes tough.
I think it's freeing when you actually do separate. When you say
at
this
the
is,
moment you
this
say, "Okay, I've got to stop. I've got to stop."
Then you can
worrying.
Open up, and fly. You're right.
But can you do a line of her voice?
Of whose voice?
Of Lady Johnson.
Let me see if I can remember.
Of
you
course,
know,
the movie's coming out, too.
She was not from Texas. She was actually from somewhere. I think she was from Arkansas, but she had sort of a... She actually didn't have that hard... You know, Texas has sort of a hard thing going, a hard R. And she has sort of a soft southern sound, although not as soft as Georgia gets. So that's the best I can do for you.
Very nice. Very nice. Wow, my goodness. You got a free performance here, Michael. I love it. So now I'm tempted to delve in and see who else you can do. I'm going to start naming historical characters. Rob Reiner's film on LBJ is coming out with Woody Harrelson.
So interesting. You know,
Rob Reiner's such a director. I finished a project with... I'm always impressed by how much the Reiner family has given to the entertainment industry. Carl Reiner's one of my favorites from long ago. But I'm also sitting here and I'm thinking about how bad Dick Van Dyke's accent was in Mary Poppins. And I'm like, how did somebody who comes from that kind of family with that kind of wonderful entertainment family not stop that?
Well,
so.
I couldn't dance like him, so there that's, you go.
You know, something I've always said with Mr.
We all
Van
have
Dyke,
our skills.
In fact, I once heard him speak about this, but I've always thought that he did such a good job of personifying the character that the accent you could almost just let go as that's that guy's accent, and, you know, whatever it is.
Especially someone as famous as he was.
Of course.
to step into that role, I mean, America loved this guy anyway, so he could do no wrong.
That's right.
He is so wonderful. Right.
What propelled you, Nikki, to become an actress? Was it inherent in your family because someone else was, or?
No one in my family acted, but my parents were huge theater goers. Mm. They went to the opera, they went to Boston. I grew up in Boston, that was a tryout town. And they saw every play that, you know, they saw Barbara Streisand when she was trying out Funny Girl in Boston. And so every Friday or Saturday night, they go out on a date that was to go to the theater, go to Boston, have dinner, and go to the theater. So they were both huge theater fans. Wow. So I think that's probably where it came from.
And then with regard to your talent as a coach for an accent and so forth, how did you get into that?
I think, again, it was probably my family. I grew up in a Greek-American family, and my parents were both, Greek was their first language, although they were born here. And so I grew up hearing other languages and accents, and my father was from D.C., and he loved sort of imitating people and imitating accents. And
did he do Lady Bird Johnson by any chance?
I never heard his Lady Bird.
Well, the show we're talking about is, of course, King Charles III, now playing at the Pasadena Playhouse. Nikki, where can people find out more about you, or do you have any other projects coming up, too, in addition to this great one?
I do. Thank you for asking. I belong to the NTS Company, which we have a new, beautiful new theater in Glendale. And I am directing, as soon as this play is over, in fact, there's a little overlap, a production of Harold Pinter's play, The Hot House.
I love Pinter. Good job. That's not done enough around here.
This
well done.
Is a Pinter like one you've never seen. It's sort of if Jill Wharton and Harold Pinter had a baby.
Oh.
The funniest, darkest, creepiest, oddest. It's wonderful.
Well, and Orton obviously is such an important playwright for the time that he wrote. And, I mean, his plays, it's so funny when you watch Prick Up Your Ears or what have you, you know, that sort of thing. You realize his plays changed the way England looked at theater and the world looked at theater in a lot of ways, too, which is pretty cool. Jim, how about you? Do you have anything coming up that we can know about? We can find you other ways other than just King Charles III?
Well, I wish I did. My focus is right here.
It's got to be a little all-consuming.
I did
just finish shooting a film by Adam McKay, which hopefully will show up in theaters soon after the beginning of the year, called Backseat. I am of a long line of blue-collar actor workers who, you know, as soon as the job is done, we get right back up out there and see what the next gig is going to be. So.
And well, who inspired you in your young life to do what you're doing?
I did not have a chance. I was the baby in the family.
Uh-huh.
And my older siblings used to dress me up and throw me out in front of the parents and their friends. And
go perform, boy.
We all did. We performed the Ed Sullivan Show every Sunday night for
fair
our parents.
Enough.
So
that's
it, comes, it comes pretty deeply to my psyche. But I tried to I distracted myself in college and went to film school, and then it caught up with me, I think, as it does with every performer, and you eventually come back to what you really love to do.
Got to go home and find your heart. That's absolutely true.
Still doing it.
Well, the name of the play is King Charles III, again, playing at the beautiful Pasadena Playhouse. It opened on November 8th and runs through December 3rd. That's Wednesday through Friday evenings at 8 p.m., Saturday at 2 p.m. and 8 p.m., Sunday at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. There will be a Tuesday performance on November 28th at 8 p.m.
And there is not a Thursday night performance on November 23rd or a matinee performance on Sunday, November 12th, and there are no Sunday night 7 p.m. performances on November 12th, 19th, and 26th. A lot of information to remember, but we'd like to put it out there at least once. And again, priced very well. I mean, for $25, you can barely get a Wendy's combo.
That's right.
You know, from the drive-thru. So spend it more wisely than that. And as we always say on this program, get up and put that remote down and get take your children, take your family out to the theater and see the live performing arts, because we need that kind of support for them to stay around.
Of course, the Pasadena Playhouse box office is located at 39 South El Molino Avenue in Pasadena. And, of course, the phone number there is 626-356-7529. But the easiest way is probably just to jump online and go to PasadenaPlayhouse.org.
Yep.
Uh-oh, Michael.
Oh, it's that time?
It is that time.
Oh, my goodness.
And now, embarrassing moments.
Are you scared?
Very much.
Okay.
You don't get applause for them?
Oh, no. That's the voice of God. He needs no applause. Although we may have to pay a royalty if I keep using it like that. So, Michael,
He's our friend.
He does. In fact, he plays Scrooge, just to let people behind the curtain a little more. That's Ed Hall, the great Ed Hall from The Tonight Show, plays Scrooge with Alan Hunt and I and the great cast of Christmas Carol of Torque. So, this segment is just something we do where we tell people who may be younger performers that even great stars have had something happen that was so embarrassing, so horrible that they almost left the business, but they pushed on and reached great heights. Do either of you have anything like that happened in your career? I see Jim laughing already. Nikki, do you have anything that comes to mind?
Well, nothing has ever embarrassed. I probably should be embarrassed to say that nothing has ever embarrassed me so much that made me think I should leave the business. I just won't leave the business.
I love it.
But the first, I'll just tell you the first thing that came to my mind. It was for a television audition, and for a part that I had a lot of pages for, and I went in and I had about 11 pages stacked up, and as I was auditioning, I was sort of throwing them on the floor because there was just too much. And at one point, I gesticulated, as I often will, and the whole pile of papers sort of went flying, I didn't have my lines in front of me, and so I had to stop completely, pick up the paper, and start again in the middle of the scene. And it was for a sitcom, and there was a lot of laughs in the scene. And I have to say, this is what, for your younger listeners, I apologized at the end. I said, I'm so sorry I had that kerfuffle, and they didn't even notice, and I booked the part, and it was a recurring role.
Wow.
So don't worry about mistakes like that. Worry about connecting to the material, which is why I dropped the pages, because I was engaged.
That's interesting. Yeah. You know, that's funny, too, that you took the time to apologize. To ignore it, I think, would have been strange. So that's another good point there, is go ahead and address it. Say, hey, look, you know, this is what happened. Jim, what do you got for us? We give extra points for nudity, just so you know. We've had many costume malfunctions.
I did have a costume malfunction last night. I was going to mention
No!
But I just want to say
missed
that
it. I'm sorry.
Suddenly tickets for the show skyrocket. Everybody going with that.
I was acting so strongly that nobody noticed. But it is really important to know that when mistakes happen, that's what makes a live performance exciting.
That's right.
And you have to embrace those things that you don't expect. Last night, we're still in the early part of our run, and I have a very quick costume change and come right back in on the opposite side of the stage. And somehow in the dark, somebody had handed me one of my son's shirts to put on.
Now,
you're not the size of a 12-year-old,
no,
I've noticed, yes.
I am 6'4" and spent my day off eating In-N-Out burgers and beer. And I was wearing Adam's shirt last night through the climax of the play, and I felt like the Incredible Hulk.
Maybe it's a character choice.
I think they have to buy him a new shirt.
That's so funny.
And
I did not know.
I was scared to even try to take it off because I didn't think I could.
In fact, it's still on underneath today, ladies and gentlemen. It can't peel it off.
Hilarious.
That's hilarious.
But we embrace those things.
And timely, too. I think that's the first time we've ever had one that happened last night.
Yes.
Breaking ground here.
That's true.
Couldn't be fresher. That's right.
We have had, regarding costume malfunctions and so forth, not malfunctioning, but I think one on the top of the list was an actor who had to go through the whole play until he could figure out what was going on, but there was a rat inside of his costume.
One of those big costume heads.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you imagine that?
That's not embarrassing.
And finished the performance.
That's got to be an urban myth.
I told it on our show. We would have called him out. I did research, my friend, on this. I couldn't believe it. I honestly was so aghast. I hesitated to ask anybody else another embarrassment. How do you top that?
You know?
It was unbelievable. But we've had many costumes. We had one performer from Cats on Broadway who made a mighty leap, and their tail got stuck, and they missed the leap over the orchestra pit and landed inside of it instead. So, and this is Broadway. Right, so I mean, you're dealing with some pretty tough high stakes there too.
That's terrible.
Whatever happens, the show must go on. What a joy to have both of you here with us today.
Absolutely.
Again, the name of the show is King Charles III, and obviously playing at the beautiful Pasadena Playhouse. Get a chance, go out and see it. Visit PasadenaPlayhouse.org
now through December 3rd. And about some of the other shows we spoke about on today's program: Levi the Musical opening this weekend. Tomorrow night is the press opening. And that is at the Camino Theater at the Los Angeles City College. And it is based on the life of Levi Strauss.
That's right.
Written by the great Oscar-winning Sherman Brothers.
A great, great show, and starring Mark Ginsburg. We obviously encourage you to get out and see that. And, of course, the Center Theater Group's extension of Spamilton at the Kirk Douglas Theater. Another great show, and you can visit www.centertheatergroup, that's theater with an R-E, .org to get tickets for that. Hey, Michael. Nice
yes.
to see you, my friend.
Nice to see you, too.
Great show today. Great
to
talk to you.
We won't see each other because we're doing a rebroadcast next week.
That's
on
right.
Thanksgiving, so you're all set with the whole program of cooking, and
we've got our plans set, and I know that obviously a lot of our listeners are going to be traveling, so we encourage you to drive safely, have a good, happy Thanksgiving. Hey, Michael, when will I see you next week, and where?
Probably on the radio, right? We'll see me
the week after. That's right, the week after.
I will be at Roy's on Thanksgiving Day.
Are you going to be there?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
So can people come out and get an autograph from you at Roy's?
Probably wouldn't even dream of it, but on the people side, hey, why would they do that? The waiter is interested in getting my autograph. Right?
We joke a lot, obviously, and we have a good time, but I got to tell you, seriously, Thanksgiving is a dangerous holiday to be driving on, so do stay safe as we get out and about. A lot of people out there, and we'll see you guys in 2 weeks.
Yes, indeed, we will, folks. Thank you for it. Again, Jim and Nikki, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Right. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.